This is the best of the Albert Mueller Program. We won't be taking your phone calls today, but stay tuned for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mueller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mueller Program, broadcasting to you live today from Colorado Springs, Colorado, here in the studios of Focus on the Family, where I'm here for a series of meetings. It's great to be here in Colorado Springs today. I've been able to look out on a beautiful day, looking at Pikes Peak as I've been involved in meetings here. But we're meeting together here by radio in order to talk about the things that matter. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. I got to tell you, we've got a big topic today. As a matter of fact, we're going to talk about a few things here in the opening segment that we'll be following up on in subsequent programs. But today our main topic is what I wrote about at my website at albertmueller.com today. I entitled the article, "The Pornification of a Culture." Then I asked the question, what's going on in the office next door? I want to tell you, just when you think you've seen just about everything there is to see on pornography, well, this comes along. The Washington Times published a report and editorial in its edition just a couple of days ago, in which it makes very clear that some of what we thought we knew about pornography just is the tip of the iceberg. So here's one stat. It's the stat that just leapt out at me. One of the major porn industry tracking services reports that 70% of all pornographic downloads take place between the hours of 9 and 5. In other words, the workplace is becoming pervasively pornographic. Even as the culture itself, of course, is giving itself more and more to pornography and defining the definition of pornography continually down, now we have the reality that many corporations, many institutions, libraries, similar kinds of places are beginning to wonder, are we being turned into basically vehicles for the delivery of pornography for employees, users, members, the general public? You know, when you start looking at this statistic, it tells you that a whole lot could be going on in the office or the cubicle next door that you don't even want to think about. Now, interestingly, the Washington Times, I thought, did a very good job, because you would think that perhaps the main angle here would be financial, and they do cover this. A lot of companies are worried about potential litigation, claims of a kind of sexual discrimination or sexual abuse that could come from employees who are offended by the fact that they find out their coworkers are looking at porn. But the Washington Times went further and said this is really corrupting the heart and soul of a nation. Now, the argument I'm making in my article published today at albertmueller.com is that this is another sign that we're reaching a tipping point on the pornography issue in the United States, to where we're really shifting from talking about America as having a problem with pornography to a new reality in which America is becoming a pornographic culture. Now, I'm not sure that I know where that tipping point is, but I'll tell you, just in terms of the ambient pornography all around us, just in terms of the fact that we are defining pornography down all the time in terms of what we will admit really is pornography, and in light of the fact that we're making it accessible 24/7 everywhere, just a click away, and now perhaps even just a cubicle away, we're looking at a big problem in this country. And I think it's one we need to talk about, because it really gets to where, well, taxpayers are involved. One of the issues in this editorial, the Washington Times, has to do with the fact that Senator Charles Grassley, who is the ranking Republican member of the Committee on Finance in the United States Senate, is holding hearings because he got upset at a report submitted to his committee by the National Science Foundation. And you say, well, what does that have to do with pornography? I'll tell you. The National Science Foundation included in its report that one of its current challenges is dealing with employee downloads of pornography. In other words, in a report to Congress on the stewardship of government funds, the National Science Foundation has admitted that some of its own employees are using a significant amount of department time and agency money and resources in order to download pornography. That's big news. I think a lot of Americans think pornography is always someone else's problem, or pornography is something that's remote without realizing that it is invading virtually every dimension of the culture. Again, I'll make my argument. We are not merely a nation with a porn problem. We are a nation becoming pornographic in terms of the larger culture. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd love to hear from you. And we're going to be talking about that. But here in the opening segment, I have to tell you what we're going to be talking about tomorrow, or the next time we are together. And that will be on Tuesday of next week. We'll be broadcasting, and we'll be talking from San Diego, California, in terms of this particular program. And this program is going to be on what I just had a very interesting interview about, and that is the report that the White House, the Obama White House, is right now, vetting prayers for White House and government official ceremonies. This is unprecedented. It's completely new. The report I saw was from U.S. News by Dan Gilgoff. It is a fascinating reality. It has now been confirmed by the White House. The White House is vetting prayers. This means that the prayers at so many of these events are now government-sponsored, government-approved, White House stamp of approval prayers. And we're going to be talking about this because I can't imagine that the White House is doing this, but they are. They have now confirmed that they're doing this. We have pastors who are giving reports in this account that I have here in U.S. News talking about how they have self-censored so that they did not use the name of Jesus because that might offend some. There are pastors here who clearly are allowing their prayers to be vetted. Let me just give you a word of the strongest exhortation I know. Pastor, if you allow your prayers to be vetted by anyone, give it up. Cash it in. That is a violation of your calling. You know, any pastor that would preach what it is an amount or pray a government-approved prayer or preach a government-approved sermon, I just have to say I think that's a repudiation of what we are about. If I'm going to get up and pray, it's going to be a Christian prayer, and it's not going to be vetted by anybody. If you want me to pray, it's going to be my prayer. It's going to be who I am, and I'm going to pray according to my convictions. You want me to preach? I'm going to preach a message that is drawn from the Word of God, and you're going to hear it. If you don't want that, then invite someone else to preach. But the idea that I would put to any White House a prayer in order for it to be vetted and officially approved, well, that's just beyond my imagination. You can find this. I'm going to be writing about it in the coming days. We're going to be talking about it next week. It's just that important. I look at this, and I just have to step back in absolute amazement and say, how in the world could this be? Again, we're going to come back to talk about the pornification of the culture. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. The Washington Post is out with an interesting article this morning suggesting that the federal government is now taking a step toward implementing a ban on genetic discrimination in hiring and promoting workers. The idea behind this is that some people will not have medical and genetic tests because once perhaps something is found, a proclivity toward a certain kind of cancer, a propensity towards a certain disease, employers might use this in order to discriminate in hiring and promoting workers. This new law is considered to be the first legislative expansion of employment discrimination since the 1990 Americans with Disabilities Act. One of the people behind this who feels like it's very important, Susanna Baruch, law and policy director at the Genetics and Public Policy Center at Johns Hopkins University, said that this marks a new era. This is what she had to say, and I quote, "There are many factors an individual may consider in deciding whether to take a genetic test, but the fear of discrimination must not be one of them." Now, the reason I raise this is not to be pro or con on this legislation. If anything, I'm very much for it. I think it makes sense. And I think without this, the effect will be that people will not have tests they otherwise will have and perhaps should have. But my issue is this. It's not just in terms of discrimination in the workplace that this kind of information is morally significant. The reality is that discrimination or immoral kinds of prejudicial action could be taken far beyond the arena of employment. Which is to say, I think there are people who are unaware that when they have this genetic testing done, the knowledge of what comes back from that testing can present excruciating, very difficult moral quandaries. And the reality is that our technology, once again, is far ahead of our morality. Our technology is now racing ahead of where we have the moral apparatus to think some of these things through. There are people who are having tests, and some of these tests can actually indicate with what is claimed to be a fairly high degree of reliability, a propensity towards certain fatal diseases. Well, what do you do? What do you do when you find out that information? What do you do when you find out that information, realign your life, and is wrong? What do you do when you have to figure out how you're going to relate to people knowing that you have a propensity toward this particular disease? Do you have children? Do you get married? And there are all kinds of issues here. Discrimination in the workplace is certainly a real and present danger, but discrimination in terms of other issues of life looms as an even larger issue. And not just discrimination, the kinds of choices, the kinds of forced, quandaries that will be faced by much of this information, we're just not there yet. You know, somehow in this Genesis 3 world, our technology has just leapt so far ahead of the moral apparatus to deal with so many of these things. And the evidence of that is already before us. You have this incredible array of tests that are now available prenatally. And what do we know? We know that a good number of parents are finding out that there is identified some genetic marker for Down syndrome and they're aborting children. This has led directly to a Holocaust in the womb, where you have now thousands of babies that are being aborted simply because it is believed that they may well have Down syndrome. I do believe that discrimination in the workplace based on some of these genetic testing may be a real and present danger, and I'm all for Congress taking some responsible action to make certain that employers cannot use this kind of information as discrimination in the workplace. But I find it fascinating that Congress is quick to move when the matter is the workplace and discrimination there, but seems to be very much unaware of what's going on when it comes to even more pressing issues of life. Back to talk about the pornification of America. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Is the best of the Albert Mueller Program. The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The issue of pornography is one to which we return time and time again because it's one of the issues that recurs in terms of the challenges we face time and time again. I was telling an interviewer just in the last few hours that when the issue of pornography comes up, it's like, let's put it this way. It's like every day when something comes along and people start talking about the problems they face, whether it's a youth pastor or whether it's a parent, whether it's a young person or whether it's someone just trying to look at the toxification of the culture, one of the quickest things they mention is pornography. And as the statistics have been rising And as we've been able to document more and more use of pornography, as, of course, the Internet has opened to this broadband superhighway and taken it basically out of the back alleys and put it into the bedrooms, we now find it's in the offices as well. And as much as I have looked at this issue and really tried to get at the heart of it spiritually, theologically, in terms of the worldview, in terms of its effects, in terms of its destruction of so many marriages and of so many lives of those who should be married and should be finding fulfillment in marriage, I started looking at this report from the Washington Times, an editorial statement in terms of its shape, and I look at it and I say, this is something I really didn't take into account. I did not know this. I did not know what Sex Tracker, an adult search engine, reports, as is indicated in this report from the Washington Times, that 70% of pornography is viewed between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. As the editorial writer for the Washington Times says, this gives a whole new meaning to the question, what did you do at work today, honey? That one salient fact is enough to tell us that we are a society that is changing from being a society that has a porn problem to being a society that's becoming pornographic. Because when you're looking at these kind of stats, that tells you that you really don't know what's going on in the cubicle or the office next door. And I cited in my article some other things that are just a part of this picture. For instance, you have courts striking down the right of libraries to filter out porn use in terms of the libraries in public places. And I was just recently in a major public library in the United States of America, and I went up to just to see some of the features of this library. I went to look at the reading room everyone was talking about. I love libraries. And as I was walking through the central atrium, I saw the computer center, and they were all over the place in there, and there were people who were in there. And I can just tell you that I saw that some of these people were doing things they ought not to be doing. And now you have court saying that it is a restriction of some constitutional right to say that in a public library, where you could have kids walking by. You could have adolescents, younger children, teenagers. You could have them all just walking by. You could have anybody walking by and the screen would be visible. And now we're being told that that's just protected free speech. Now, you have things like this that are going on. And it just makes me wonder how you are thinking this through in terms of the porn issue. And the question that I want to throw to us today, as I really want us to think this through, is how we respond to a society where we now have to kind of expect, we have to more or less now expect that a lot of the people we know are really hooked into pornography. That an awful lot of the people we meet and we see, even at our local church, even at a family reunion, the stats just tell us a lot of these folks are really struggling with pornography. The question is, now what do you do about it? If you want to live in ignorance and in denial, you can try to ignore the problem. But if you're a parent, if you're a young person concerned with yourself and with your friends, if you are a pastor, not to mention a youth pastor or a student minister trying to deal with these issues, you know that the problem is a lot worse than most people imagine. And now, and this is what the Washington Times makes so clear, if you are a CEO of a major corporation, you've got to worry about your legal liability with potentially hundreds and thousands of your employees using your computers and your workspace in order to fulfill their sexual fantasies through pornography. Senator Charles Grassley, again, as I mentioned earlier in the program, is holding hearings because in the report from the National Science Foundation submitted to the Senate Finance Committee, there is an admission that one of its challenges is what it calls a systematic problem of its own government employees using government computers to view pornography. I didn't expect to see that. That, you know, just when you think you can't be shocked anymore, something comes along that jolts you out of some complacency as to believing that this is a stable problem. This isn't a stable problem. This is not a problem that is in neutral. This is a problem that is growing. It's like a toxic spill that is spilling throughout the remainder of the culture. And if you think it won't touch your life, if you think it won't touch your friend, your family, if you think it won't touch your church, your school, you're wrong. It probably already has, almost assuredly already has. And, I talked to someone the other day who said, I am so thankful that I have girls because my girls aren't likely to be as attracted to internet pornography as if I had teenage boys. And I would say, well, listen, who do you think they're going to marry? This is everybody's problem. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. What do you do when you're trying to think through living in a pornographic culture? And how do you think this through in terms of, the workplace, the public library, and all these places? As America becomes a pornographic culture, not just a culture that has a porn problem, but a pornographic culture, what are we going to do? On this program already, I've talked about what I call the reality of ambient pornography. This is where you drive down the street. You see it in the billboard. This is where you walk into the mall. You see it in the department store, in the models, in the displays. This is where advertising, marketing, it's all delivered just this way. And not to mention what is explicit pornography, which is just a click away from the superhighway of the delivery of the most explicit pornography. Fascinating things coming out of the reports. You've got the porn industry, by the way, saying that it's hitting rough times financially. Yes, you heard it right. Even as we're talking about the pervasiveness of porn, and I described it as a toxic spill that's spreading, an epidemic that is going hot, you say, how can the porn industry be in trouble? I tell you how they can be in trouble. It's because now you can have homemade pornography with the digital revolution that that people are posting all over the place, and people are saying, well, if I can get it for free, why do I want to pay for it? And so you have something, the reality of why daily newspapers are going out of business, because if people can get it from the internet for free, they don't have to buy a newspaper. And that's why the porn industry is in trouble. I'd love to know what you're thinking about this, especially parents, youth pastors, student ministers, pastors, those who are in positions where you're having to deal with this. There may be a CEO out there saying, I've got to deal with this in terms of my employees. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let me tell you one other thing that I heard, and it's one of those things that you just kind of file away in the back of your mind. I heard an employer say, if you're going to hire the millennials, if you're going to hire anyone, say, now 18 to 30 years old, you have to assume that they're coming with a lot of these practices, that they're coming with a lot of these habits. You just have to assume if you're going to hire anyone that age, you're going to have to define your expectations down. Well, what does that say? Some of you from that generation, is that accurate? What would your response be? Give me a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We got callers calling in from around the country. We're going to get to your calls right after this break. We're also glad to hear from you, of course, at Twitter.com and at Facebook. At Twitter, just follow Mueller Radio. At Facebook, go to the page for the Albert Mueller Program. The issue today is the pornification of a culture. What happens when America no longer merely has a porn problem? What happens when we just become a pornographic society? What happens when we are, as a culture, the porn problem? And by the way, one little footnote to this, that's exactly what many people around the world think of when they think of America. It is fascinating, having just been in some of the Muslim-dominated lands, I can tell you that one of the things that you'll hear about America is that it is the fountain place, that it is the fountainhead and the originating spring of so much of the sexually explicit material that America now disseminates to the rest of the world. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Back with your calls. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
the best of the Albert Mueller Program. We won't be taking your phone calls today, but stay tuned for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mueller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program, broadcasting to you today live from Colorado Springs, Colorado. I'm here in the studio, and I decided that I would quickly post at Twitter.com an update on what we're going to be talking about on the program. And here's a little lesson in using the new social media. I decided that I would say that we were going to be talking about new porn stats. Unfortunately, my iPhone corrected stats to stars, which led to an entirely different expectation concerning what this program was about, and apologies to all my friends who had heart attacks. It's new porn stats, not new porn stars. Kind of gets to the heart of the problem, though, doesn't it? We're talking about how America is being turned from a country with a porn problem into a nation that is becoming pornographic in itself. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. And as I apologize to all those who had heart attacks, I nearly had one myself. We're talking about the statistic that 70% of all porn downloads take place between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. during the workplace hours. That's a shock. Let's go to Phoenix, Arizona. Paul's on the line. What are you thinking, Paul?
Thanks for taking my call, Dr. Mueller. My comment was that our church has had a lot of success in faith, and I believe the church is the answer, because in faith-based initiative programs where people come alongside 12-step-based programs where people with pornographic issue, whether it's a sexual addiction or just pornography itself, and bringing it to light and having a program available where other men can come alongside, because I know from my own experience to try and tackle this by myself was impossible, but to have a man come alongside me and mentor me and disciple me and be truthful with me, but also administer grace and love along with that truth was what broke the cycle for me.
Paul, I really appreciate your call. I appreciate your honesty and candor. And, you know, you raise an issue here that usually brings out all of my allergies. You know, when a sin problem is referred to as an addiction problem. But I want to affirm what you had to say there, because we now have some data. And by the way, this doesn't reduce the moral implications at all. It doesn't mean that anyone is any more innocent of using pornography. It just means that the problem is more intractable. And just as Paul said, harder to solve than people may imagine. It's not just turning the computer off. It's not just walking away or canceling the subscription. The reality is that viewing pornography in the male brings out pleasure chemicals from the brain called endorphins, including serotonin. And there's actually an addictive pattern, a chemical addiction that can happen. And not only is it addictive, it also requires more and more to get the same level of stimulation. And so that's why people tend to get deeper and deeper into the problem and find themselves doing what they said they would never do. And I really appreciate what Paul had to say. And I want to go further than just say faith-based to say I believe the gospel of Christ is the only rescue ultimately from this. And that's true because the gospel of Christ is the only rescue from the problem of sin, of which this is such an intractable manifestation. All right, thank you so much for your call, Paul, from Phoenix, Arizona. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky, where Fritz is online. Go ahead, Fritz.
Thank you for taking my call. I think we need, as Christians, one of the answers, I think, to the pornography issue is we need to hear directly and from the pulpits, too, I believe, that the best policy for Christians is to, as much as possible, stay off the Internet. We need to regard the Internet as inherently dangerous. For all the good that's on the Internet, there's about 1,000 times more evil. And most people, you talked about technology getting ahead of our morality. I believe the Internet has put us way beyond most people's capacity to deal with temptation. And so the best policy is if you can't bank online without going and surfing for porn, you should not be banking online. You should just walk down to your teller branch and do your banking down there.
You know, that's a very cogent word, Fritz. I appreciate it. I didn't mean to speak over you there, but that's a very valid point. You know, I saw some statistics that weren't directly related to porn use that I'll just relate to Fritz's point. And that is, I saw that the average adolescent now reports being online 30-plus hours a week. Now, you just figure that. Let me just tell you, your average adolescent is not doing 30 hours of banking on the Internet. Okay, just to take Fritz's point and to affirm it. You know, there's some good things, positive things, educational things, wholesome things that can be found on the internet. But I have to tell you, any teenager, unless he's writing a PhD dissertation on astrophysics with parental supervision, getting data from the internet, he's almost assuredly doing something in that 30 hours that that you wouldn't approve of. You know, this gets back to my rule, especially about the computer for teenagers and children. Have it in the kitchen where everybody sees where the user's going. When it comes to adults, and this is a point for Fritz and others, you know, there have to be other means of accountability. But there are some of those means. But he's also right. If this becomes a trap to you, then get out of the internet. Take a walk to the bank. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We'll be right back with more calls on the Albert Mueller Program.
This is the best of the Albert Mueller Program. The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're talking about pornography. The article I posted at my website at albertmueller.com this morning is entitled "The Pornification of a Culture, What's Going On in the Office Next Door." We're talking here about the stat released that 70% of pornography downloads take place between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. Now, surely there are people who probably aren't on, you know, work time or at a work computer during that hour who are doing that downloading, but it certainly implies, given the patterns of internet use, that means that the majority of these downloads are taking place during the working day. That kind of redefines perhaps the way you're looking at pornography. And it was a statistic that shocked me. And I've seen so much of the information about this problem that I thought I was kind of beyond being shocked. But last night, when that crossed my desk, it caught my attention immediately. The phone number to join this conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. What do you do? How do you cope with a society that is turning itself into a pornographic culture? Not merely a culture with a porn problem, not just one that has a vastly influential and productive porn industry, but one that is transforming itself into a pornographic society. The phone number again is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to New Albany, Indiana, where Mary's on the line listening to WFIA. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi, Albert. My question is this. If we can make prostitution illegal in our country in certain states, isn't there some kind of mandate on internet pornography, especially during work hours?
Say that one more time. I'm sorry, just so I understand you, Mary.
Okay, with certain states making prostitution illegal in our country, isn't there something that we can do to mandate the use or make it illegal as far as internet pornography?
Yeah, okay, now I got the question. What confused me was when you mentioned during the hours. Yeah, you know, here's the bottom line. One of the biggest problems, I deal with this in my article, one of the biggest problems here is that we have a court system that is bought into the argument that pornography is a form of protected free speech. I disagree with that. I think that's ridiculous. And furthermore, once you begin to define pornography as constitutionally protected speech, then it leads to other implications, which is exactly why I brought up the library issue, because then it said that receiving or using this material is a constitutionally formed, a constitutionally protected form of free speech. And so you look at that and you say, well, where does that lead? Then what about children? Do children have a constitutional right to view pornography? Well, again and again, we're seeing the logic of a culture move that way. So as much as I would like to make pornography illegal, and it would have to be carefully defined here, and no one would believe that would always be easy. The Bible has very explicit statements concerning sex, but it's not pornographic, and no one in his right mind would believe that it is so. So we'd have to make a distinction between an honest discussion of sex and what is intended to be the presentation of what is for sexual arousal, and what is legally defined as prurient sexual interest. But I do believe it could be done. And by the way, just to make your point, Mary, there is currently a set of some laws against pornography. So we have laws against child pornography. And if you can have laws against child pornography, then you've made the point that not all pornography, virtually every court would now agree, is a constitutionally protected form of speech. Then why is any pornography a constitutionally protected form of speech? I'm with you, Mary. I don't think the culture is headed in that direction, but I'm with you in terms of your logic. I appreciate your call. Let's go to Connecticut. Joan's on the line. Go ahead, Joan.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment about pornography and marriage. I think I see a direct correlation with the divorce rate and pornography in light of what you were saying about the not being satisfied and all that other stuff that goes along with the more you use it, the more the urge is insatiable.
Yeah, well, you know, again, you talk about how you have a picture of sin illustrated by this particular sin. So let's just think about the pattern of sin as we would come to understand it in the Bible. It is attractive to the eye. That's certainly what you see. It has it appeals to the desire. And the next thing you know, it begins to affect the will so that the will begins to desire the thing. And the next thing you know, the will gives itself to this sin, to this practice, and then it becomes appetitive. An appetite develops for it. And the next thing you know, the life becomes one that revolves around that sin. And, you know, that is just a horrible picture. It's like the vortex of a whirlpool. You know, one willingly enters into that whirlpool for the dance, for the joy, for what is perceived to be the pleasure and the thrill. The next thing you know, you're being literally drawn down into the depths of the thing from which you then believe you can't extricate yourself. Now, why is that a good picture of sin? It's because that is the sin problem. We cannot extricate ourselves from the sin problem. That is why we are entirely dependent upon the atonement that was accomplished by Jesus Christ. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. That's the very miracle. You know, as the book of Ephesians says, well, we were dead in our trespasses and sins, but God, who is rich in mercy in Christ, has redeemed us. And, you know, that's the secret right there. And that's why pornography functions in this conversation today very much like in Romans 1, homosexuality functions. Just to say this is what sin looks like. Look at it, understand exactly what it represents, and then turn to Christ. Because the only rescue from the problem of sin, for which these are manifestations, forms, and illustrations, the only rescue is possible through Christ. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Fascinating conversation. I've had some people write in. I had one write in to say, why are you limiting your concern here to pornography in the library or in the workplace? Why not call for the making of all pornography illegal? Well, once again, I wrote about what the stats were talking about, and that is the use of pornography in the workplace. Again, I was stunned by that statistic: 70% downloaded between the hours of 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. And I'm just horribly offended by the logic of these decisions having to do with public libraries. But I certainly am not limiting the issue there. In fact, if you look at my website and look at my articles on pornography, I would want to use any means possible to rid ourselves of this scourge as a society, because it's not just that I find it distasteful, it's that I know it is bringing ruin into lives. But to have a conversation about making all porn illegal, we're going to have to gain some ground about, first of all, helping this society to know that pornography is something it should see as an enemy, as an insidious enemy that undermines not only marriages and relationships and lives, but the very heart of the culture. We're in a society that is turning itself, as I've said before, from one that has a porn problem to one that is inherently pornographic. A society that has made itself pornographic is in no position to then talk about making it illegal. That can only happen when the society understands porn for the threat and the imminent danger that it is. We'll be back to talk about more on the Albert Mueller Program, live today from Colorado Springs, Colorado. This is a place for intelligent Christian conversation. We'll be right back.
Is the best of the Albert Mueller Program.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Good discussion today. I appreciate the callers, also those who have written us by various forms, Twitter, Facebook, email. And once again, I was talking earlier about just a little interesting lesson in terms of the new social media. Better be careful when you're using your iPhone. It'll correct you in ways you don't want to be corrected. But the big point is that we are facing a real revolution in terms of the media. I did an interview earlier today with Boundless for a podcast about the new social media and how evangelicals should relate to and be involved in this new media. And the way I referred to it is this. I said, you know, it's becoming the new crowd. And if you want to reach a vast segment of this society, we need to see it as a continent of people to whom we can have a conversation. But we also need to realize that, as with every technology, there are downsides and as there are gains. That podcast I'll let you know about as soon as it's available here at boundless.org. But let me also mention to you that there's an interesting news story coming out of Colorado. We're here in Colorado Springs, and many thanks to the studios and folks here at Focus on the Family. I'm a member of the board of Focus on the Family. I've been proud to be out here for a series of meetings and board meetings. But while I was here, it is of interest to me that a major hallmark in terms of the shift in the media has taken place even as we are here in Colorado. Tomorrow, the Rocky Mountain News of Denver will produce its very last edition. According to the Associated Press, the Rocky Mountain News will cease publication on Friday with its last edition. The E.W. Scripps Company announced on the newspaper's website today that its search for a buyer for the paper was unsuccessful. The statement says, "Today the Rocky Mountain News, long the leading voice in Denver, becomes a victim of changing times in our industry and a huge economic challenge. The paper lost $16 million last year. According to the Associated Press, financial problems are widespread in the newspaper industry as the economy has deteriorated, ad revenue has tumbled, readers have gravitated toward the Internet, and advertisers have followed them there." Now, looking at this, it's just another reminder that we're living in a time of massive social change. One dimension of that social change is change in the media and the way human beings communicate and relate to each other. The loss of one medium is always really the harbinger of the arrival of another. And we're looking at a new reality, and I would suggest that as evangelical Christians, we better be looking at this very carefully, because if there is an illustration here about, well, a Great Commission principle that is at stake, if you are trying to reach people with a newspaper medium in a world that has already shifted to others, you're going to be talking to an older and declining population. We have the great challenge of speaking to a new generation and speaking to a culture that desperately needs to hear the word of the gospel. And this is just another reminder, sad and lamentable for those of us who love newspapers and the news media culture that it is a part of. We've got a bigger challenge on Friday than we did before. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. Back tomorrow to meet you to talk about the issues that matter. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.